reporting. It's Your Turn, coming up next.
WISR now presents It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey. Dave is off today, so we have a special guest host. It's Your Turn is Butler County's only live call-in talk show. You can join in the conversation by calling 724-283-2525. And now, let's join It's Your Turn and today's special guest host.
Well, today for the show, you can pick your host. I don't know how we're going to do this, but... So I'm Tracy Morgan, in for Dave Malarkey. Tyler Frio is here, in for Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon,
Kayla Molzan is here, in for Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon, Tracy.
And Ryan Saylor is also in here.
Tracy,
hi. In for Dave Malarkey. How you doing?
Good.
And the reason I wanted to have you in, and thank you all for joining us, and really it's just, well, I'll keep... Ryan. I'll keep Ryan for the half hour.
I've been chosen.
Tyler and Kayla have other things to do, but I wanted to bring you all in here, and you were surprised when I asked you all, because we have all been pitching in for Dave, and Dave is scheduled to come back tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We still understand he is scheduled to come back tomorrow, so if we do this and he doesn't come back tomorrow, then we may do this again. But we are just together, and I thought we'd have the whole family here together who have been pitching in for Dave. And it's not necessarily my responsibility to say thank you, but I will on behalf of the station, just because we've really been pulling double duty.
And
so,
thank you, Tracy.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, we can just thank each other. It's a big thank fest, apparently.
It really does take a village, though, doesn't it? And I think we've all known, you know, what Dave contributes each day, beginning at 5 in the morning. Tyler knows that best, beginning at 5 in the morning. The whole way up through early afternoon, but we're so happy that he is feeling better. And again, I thank everybody for stepping up. But yeah, I mean, he was so greatly missed in his absence, and it took four of us plus to do what he does.
You absolutely gain a new understanding and appreciation for what he does every day, you know. Bar none.
And I think the most difficult thing, and I think a lot of the listeners are well aware of, just his level of knowledge about a variety of different subjects. I know any time that I take on a task of doing, whether it's a 15-minute to 30-minute, even an hour interview, the amount of preparation that goes into that is extensive. And so Dave's preparation makes that program sound so much better. So sure, you're only listening to him for an hour and a half each afternoon, but you can trust me, and I think you can trust all of us when we say the amount of preparation that goes in before that is quite extensive. And so, like Kayla said, it actually took five of us, you know, Scott Briggs doing it in the morning.
That's right. True. That's so, true. Throw him in here.
It literally took half the workforce.
I told Dave that once, and he just chuckled. I went, no, but seriously.
Yes. Right.
Seriously,
right.
I'm trying to tell you, it takes this many people. So we'll be looking forward to having him back.
Yeah, and I know the listeners are looking forward to it, too, because of the rapport he has with them. Mm-hmm. It's one thing, you know, for me to say something, and then if Dave says something, you know what I mean? I mean, it just they trust him.
Oh,
they trust him, which
absolutely.
Is, you know, just goes to show how professional he is.
And what I think we could all make this connection when it comes to a radio personality who we grew up listening to. And I mean, Dave's been doing this particular program for the past 17 years. He's been a part of the WISR community for 40 years. We all have that connection with a certain radio personality. And when you're on air that long, you develop not only a relationship with one or two listeners. This is generations of listeners who have been tuning in, you know, every morning to hear Dave and then every afternoon. And so I think when you miss that personality for an extended amount of time, you do feel like you're missing a part of your normal routine. Mm-hmm. And I think we've all felt that before. And when a particular radio personality goes away from whatever radio station you listen to, you're like, well, this is a little bit bizarre and I'm not used to this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it will be, I know for us, it'll be nice to just get back to regular routines around here.
Because we do have other jobs.
Exactly.
In the given space of Butler Radio. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think we're just looking back for things to get back to normality around here, and I think the listeners are looking for the same.
Having a moment to eat lunch
would
be one of those things. Instead of here, do another interview. Okay, I'm on. Here we go. But yeah, and it's fun to hear the different perspectives because I'm trying to think we all grew up around here.
Yep.
Yes, yes, and yes. And I did too. I moved away but came back. But Dave was here whenever I started at ISR 25 years ago. And so it's kind of fun just to be able to grow up. And so, Tyler, it's fun to hear that perspective of hearing him and hear I worked with him. But still, when it's given to you to say, hey, do a show, you're like, whoa, but that's Dave's show. Yeah. You know, it's like you're talking Dave Mularkey here. You want me to do a show? Right. And so, yeah, but it's still fun to be able to do that. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
So thank you all.
Thank you.
So I just wanted to pull you all in. I say kind of a final farewell, but, you know, you watch. He'll come back for the morning to give you an opportunity to sleep in, and then he'll decide to take off. No, he is
Tell you how much I'm looking forward to. I know, Kayla, you obviously don't have this privilege, like, at all. I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to the alarm ringing at, like, 6:30. It is going to be so nice. I'll wake up and go, you know what? I'd be, like, an hour and a half into my shift right now. This is going to be wonderful.
We could have Kayla call you.
But the only downfall, I'll miss, like, this 1:30, 2 o'clock nap I've been getting, which is fantastic. I love it.
I wonder, since Dave has been getting up so early for 4 decades. I wonder if he did.
He's just out of habit.
Yeah, he's probably still didn't even get to sleep.
Dave, yeah, probably did.
But at least he probably knows what day it is. And what I mean by that is we've all done a morning shift. And when you get up at like 2, 3, 4, whatever it is before the sun even rises, you get into the middle of the week and you're like, what day is this? You know, is it Thursday or is it Friday? No, it's Monday. Oh, it's Monday.
Well,
you know,
I had the sheer panic when I woke up Sunday morning, turned around, looked at the clock that was like 6:15. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm running late. I gotta go. And meanwhile, and then it took
I missed
like
the
that.
News.
Yeah, I missed, you know, 2 seconds later, I'm like, oh yeah. It's Sunday. It's fine, Tyler. You're
but
good.
Then you panic if you have to work Monday because that's all you think about.
Yep.
Right.
And when, I mean, Kayla, now you're used to this shift.
Right, sure.
I've worked this shift, and both of you have, or the guys here. But do you panic when it's like Sunday night and then you can't sleep?
Yep.
And then for me, it's Tuesday that it hits where I'm then dog tired and it's just, leave me alone.
Right?
I love y'all, but, you know, just leave me alone on Tuesday.
And again, I also want to preface this to the listeners. We fully recognize we sit in a chair and talk for a living, so it's not like we're getting up and plowing the roads or digging a ditch or anything. Like we're fully aware. These are the small little things that are bothersome.
Tyler's taking some of those calls from the PennDOT worker, like, really, Tyler? It's 2:30 in the morning,
and
I'm
here.
Shoveling.
Yeah, and it's 2 degrees outside. Fully recognize you guys have a harder job than I do.
You enjoy
I make
your
sure
coffee
I'm on
in
record.
The studio.
Exactly.
That coffee with Kate. You enjoy that.
I want to go on record.
Thank you. You just saved us all.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you both. I'd say thank you all, but I'm keeping Ryan for the rest of the time. But Kayla, thank you. Tyler, thank you for coming in for a few minutes. We'll take a break, let these guys get out, and we'll be back in just a moment. Tracy, Tyler, Kayla, Ryan, all in for Dave Mularkey with It's Your Turn.
Whether you're a backyard car fixer-upper or an auto repair shop, Milich Auto Wrecking is still the place to go for new and used auto and truck parts. They have been for over 40 years. And compared to factory prices, you'll save big bucks. Milich Auto Wrecking is neatly organized and will tell you immediately if they have the part or not. Open Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5, it's Milich Auto Wrecking, Route 38, the Oneida Valley Road. Look for the big black and red sign. Stop by or call 287-1001. And yes, old Uncle Fred still goes to Milich.
Tracy Morgan in for Dave Mularkey, and also Ryan. I kept Ryan, and as I just looked at Ryan, I said, and then there were two. Then
here
who gets voted off the island, you or me, because we have 20 minutes to decide. Maybe Pat will decide. We'll bring out our tiki torch. Not the tiki torch. Let's not go there. What do we use in Survivor anymore? The torches. Don't they still use the torches? So we could come out with the torches and somebody
that would
can
work.
Extinguish it.
Yeah.
How you doing, Ryan?
Doing all right, Tracy. How about yourself?
Good.
Awesome.
If you're just joining us, folks, I'm Tracy. This is Ryan. Ryan's in our news department, and we've kind of been alternating people here to cover for Dave, and so I wanted to pull you in for half an hour.
I appreciate it. I'm honored by the invite.
And Dave is expected to come back tomorrow, so we'll all see him. But this is our chance just to gab, which is always fun, just to talk. And the first thing I wanted to bring up was the Tide Pod
Yes.
I didn't want to call it a challenge. I didn't want to go there and give it that
right.
credit.
No, it's just a foolish stunt.
But thank you. It's a foolish... So if you haven't heard about the Tide Pod foolish stunt,
right.
you want to just go there, and I don't want to go there with challenge. Apparently, there are kids that are trying to eat them or taste them.
Yeah,
or...
I think they're putting them in their mouths, and because of the way that they were constructed, they're meant to dissolve. Like some people might have dishwasher
laundry.
Tabs
mm-hmm.
or whatever.
Or a dishwasher.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So they're supposed to get wet, and then they dissolve and fall apart, and the detergent goes out into your laundry and cleans your laundry. But people are putting these in their mouths, apparently, and they're dissolving in their mouths, and some of them are swallowing these, the contents of this. Some of them are just keeping them in their mouths, is my understanding. And it's just... I mean, I understand that being young and being a kid and you do dumb stuff, that's like risky behavior to try to get attention or it's par for the course. But this is seems like a step beyond that. This seems like...
It's downright stupid is what
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, I don't understand how anybody can get involved in doing something like this and think that there's going to be any sort of positive outcome.
Because it's detergent. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, if you're mixing, like, I don't know. Well, I say this, and I've done this, applesauce and macaroni and cheese. All
right.
It might not be tasty to some people,
right.
but, you know, I've done it before, and I've eaten it.
Or you're trying to put a bunch of Pop Rocks in your mouth
yeah.
and then putting, like, diet soda or something and then
yeah.
Watching it, like, spurt out your nose or something. I mean, that's one thing.
Okay.
But this is, like... This is going to cause physical harm to your body, yeah.
Emergency room visits.
No, absolutely.
And last night I was watching local news, one of the TV stations, and there was a report where I don't have, again, I always want to tell you these stories and I forget to bring the details
right.
in front of me. But they said something along the lines of the oldest that they have seen, who they are, I don't know. I don't know if that's
right.
a local hospital or nationally, is like 19, 20 years old. So we're not talking about... Well, just kids, because I have kids that are younger, and they've mentioned this. They better not try it.
Right.
I'll tell
no.
you what, we're going to have a
Absolutely.
Problem at my house. But they have mentioned it, so I know young kids are already aware of it. But with the report last night, you're talking 19- and 20-year-old young people. I can't even
right.
call you a kid at 19
yeah.
and 20 years old.
What? Where's the age that you can be expected to know better, to not do these things? Like... I mean, we give younger kids a pass just because they're kids and they're growing up and they're learning things and finding out their place in the world and everything. But where's the cutoff where it's just like, you know what? That's you should know better. You should be able to use your brain to figure out that this is a horrible idea.
Well, and does it matter that we're living in an age of technology? Where
yeah.
kids are getting what they want, excuse me, what they find funny at their fingertips. And I'm a parent with two kids that have electronics. Sometimes
yeah.
I have to chase them down to figure out what they're watching. So it's not easy to figure out everything that they're watching.
Right. And a lot of the stuff that they are watching is viral videos,
mm-hmm.
is people, quote unquote, normal people that are just out there doing crazy, dumb things. And then... It gets a lot of eyeballs. It gets a lot of attention, and sometimes that's a huge deal for a kid. They think that's something to aspire to, and that's something that they can shoot for. And if they just do this, maybe they'll, the difficulties that they're struggling with in their lives will be improved somehow. And if they're just able to get more people to notice them and to just gain that attention somehow, and this is just a horrible way to try to do that.
It is a horrible way because when we were young, we would have the TV shows like Funniest Home Videos or something
right.
where you see somebody riding across a log on a bike and all of a sudden the bike, splits in two.
Right.
I mean, those things
right.
you go,
right.
that probably wasn't
right.
the smartest
right.
idea. But you had professionals editing the videos together to know what is appropriate to show an audience and what's not.
Right.
Not that they were trying to hide anything from you, but they're not going to put on people eating Tide Pods.
Right.
Okay. That,
exactly.
That's just, they understand that. So now we live in an age where everybody thinks, oh, I'll just go ahead and put it on.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's really cool. Oh, I think, this is trending.
Right.
This is funny. And sometimes I don't think it's funny. Well, a lot of times I don't think it's funny.
Yeah. And you mentioned the increase in the availability of technology. Everybody's running around with a video camera on their phone. So, of course, they're gonna more things are going to be caught inadvertently just by accident, that there's going to be more exposure and more availability for people to see these things. And it's just, I don't know. I mean, some of these stores are now locking these Tide Pods up. Their guns or their you know, drugs or alcohol or things that they keep away from the public. I mean, now, they can't even trust detergent out there on the shelf.
And I wonder if it will lead to, because when you say medications, the over-counter medications, some of them you still have to ask for.
Sure.
So if you go down that road where some detergent is now behind lock and key, does that mean they all go behind lock and key?
Right.
Are we going to have to ask for that? Or does it hurt just Tide? Do you think it would hurt Tide? I don't know if it would hurt them or not. If it's just Tide behind lock and key, if that's where that would go.
I'm sure.
Because if it's not Tide and I need laundry detergent, right, I'm grabbing something else.
Right, exactly. If there's not a store person there to help you immediately, you're just going to go, all right, well, this is the same stuff. And, you know, it may not be as colorful or as in these little packs or whatever like the Tide Pods are, but I'll just grab this and this will work too. Yeah, I'm sure it is hurting them. I think that's why they've mounted this campaign to kind of raise awareness and try to divert people from
kids and young adults from doing this effort or challenge. What did you call it?
A foolish stunt.
A foolish stunt. Thank you very much. So then I want to get your reaction off of this because, again, I read this story and I automatically say, oh, I don't think that's funny. But yet I just read it to everybody and we'll just say 2 out of 4 of us kind of chuckled. I don't know. Did 3 out of 4 of us chuckle? Does that indicate I was the one not chuckling? But so I'm curious because some people think it's cute. Some people think, you know, it's fun because adults understand it.
Right.
But then I don't think it's very funny because it's a company doing this that is playing on something that is potentially dangerous. But the company's food is not dangerous. This is a donut shop in Wauwatosa.
Okay.
I don't know where Wauwatosa is.
Right.
But Cranky Owls who is making this. Cranky Owls in Wauwatosa. I just want to say Wauwatosa about 10 more times. But apparently they're making Tide Pod donuts. And what I mean by that is they make the regular donut, you have the white icing, and then you have the icing of the orange and blue colors. And it's decorated in the way a Tide Pod would look if it was an actual Tide Pod.
Right.
So it's actually a donut with icing.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with any detergent being on it.
Right.
But they made these and called them the Tide Pod Donuts. I don't necessarily think it's funny.
No. I think it's a creative idea, obviously, because they have a product that they can create to look very similar. I mean, obviously not everybody is going to be able to do that with wherever they are, but they thought up this idea. But the idea behind the whole Tide Pod situation is that this is not a good idea, that we should not be encouraging people to do this, and then creating these Tide Pod donuts on one level, it kind of seems like they're being encouraging to keep this phenomenon going, I guess.
Yeah, so just interesting, I guess, if you think things are funny like that. I don't know. I don't know if I'm just lacking the sense of humor, but...
Yeah, no, I mean, it can definitely harm you very much. I mean, I was reading about it a little bit, and it says that in 2017, there were 53 cases...
was going on last year, late last year.
Late last year.
Oh, okay.
But in 2018, already there have been 39 cases of people that have had to go to the hospital to be treated. And these are teenagers. Whereas before it was generally very young kids that, you know, confuse these if they're sitting out for candy or something like that. But it's just, I was reading about what it does to you, and it is very... It's horrible. I mean, it actually, these cleaning agents will attack and kill the cells in your mouth and just cause burning feeling and swelling. And
see, now I need to be the wealth of knowledge that you are when my kids mention this, because I'm like that grown up that just says, well, that's downright stupid.
You know, and they're like, well, why not?
Yeah, why not? No, right. It's not fun. And I should have that information right there. I need to call you next time I have my kids around.
I will be on call. You got my number.
Tie pod moment. Let's talk
about
it.
We got to have a sit down here.
Sit down and talk about Tie pods. This is Ryan Saylor.
This is my job now. I'm going to set these kids straight.
That's right. It is 12:50. I'm Tracy Morgan in with Ryan Saylor, who's part of our news staff here at Butler Radio and WISR in particular. Oh, see, this is another day. See, I was just going to go straight into a commercial. I told Pat about this the other day. I was going to turn around and say, and so we'll be back right after this. And I turn around and there's no Pat. He caught me again on our last day to do this
Pat's
together.
Pat's another one who, I mean, he's not always just, I mean, he's all over the place.
He is.
He's doing stuff all over the place. He's bouncing around, like taking care of stuff all over the place. And yeah, he's not always 100% of the time.
I'm ready to go to commercial.
There, which is, you know, it is what it is.
Hey, Pat, let's take a commercial. We'll be back right after this.
Butler Motor Tours is ready to help you get away to some exciting destinations this year. Why not head to the Mackinac Island Lilac Festival this year in June, the 15th to 18th? Now, this usually sells out every year, so get registered today. They're taking two buses, and you need to sign up early. June 17th through 22nd, it's Locomotives and Lighthouses, a wonderful New England trip. And October 6th through 11th, they'll bus you to Bermuda. It's one of their popular cruises that also fills up early. And a couple of special treats this year out to the Lancaster Millennium Theater for the Big Jesus Show that will be March 16th through 18th, or a visit to the Bible Museum in the D.C. area August 1st through the 3rd for the Faith and Nation Tour. It's all from Butler Motor Tours. Check out their website, butlerbus.com, or give them a call, 724-282-1000, Butler Motor Tours, 210 South Monroe Street in Butler.
Was that the Bible Museum in Ohio, did he say? I see that thing all the time, because I go across Ohio to visit, you know, some people in Indiana, and I see the big Bible Museum billboard on the side of the road, and every single time I go, I think, on the way back, let's visit that. And then on the way back, it's always like 9
p.m.
We just
want to get home.
I get home. Just another day for the Bible Museum.
Right.
So. But yeah, I would like to go see that. Anyway, I'm Tracy Morgan, in for Dave Malarkey. Ryan Saylor is with me, too, for another few minutes.
Yeah.
And I didn't even get through the show schedule, if you will, because really we have a couple of guests coming at 1 o'clock that will help fill out the rest of our time together, because they have, it's called Reset Your Brain. It's a revolutionary approach to opioid addiction and recovery. And there's an event that's free and open to the public that's going to be on Tuesday, February 6th. It'll be about an hour and a half program at Suck Up Theater, BC3 Main Campus. And there's going to be a speaker there who's also the author of Hope is Dope. That's the book that he wrote. And we're going to be talking about that for the next hour. So around 1 o'clock, I got a couple of guests joining us to talk about this and talk about opioids and the recovery process.
It's an ongoing issue. I mean, we just, what was it, last week or the week before, the governor declared the state of emergency in the state just to allow more resources and better cooperation, I think, to try to tackle this thing head on. And it's still a big issue, a lot of places, including here in Butler County.
Yeah, so we'll be talking about that for an hour, and so I hope you join us. And Dave is expected to be back tomorrow. So if you're looking forward to his return, he can talk about his time if he chooses tomorrow, but he will be back on his shift. So he should be back on his morning shift, too. So
that's
not just the afternoon shift, unless one of us gets a call and says, hey, can you come in? But he's feeling much better, and he'll be back in tomorrow morning. It'll be nice to see him.
So. Absolutely, and I'm sure he'll have a lot to catch up on in terms of getting up to speed with emails and correspondence. Dave gets a lot of mail.
He does.
That's the other thing we've noticed.
That.
It's kind of piling up back there, and he'll be going through all that. So he'll be busy tomorrow, but I'm sure he'll be happy to get back and be talking with folks.
And not, you know how you have a desk that you know exactly where everything is, right?
Right?
And so Dave has the same. I have the same. You know,
right.
We all have that kind of, if you move anything, I wouldn't be able to tell you where it is. But it was funny because when we started this process for him to cover for him, I think it was like 2 days in, and all of a sudden I was like, I have Dave's desk all of a sudden. You know, it was like I couldn't find what I needed because it wasn't where I needed it.
Right.
And, you know.
Exactly.
Like,
and you're trying to like sort through things, and it's like, no,
another
that's
book,
not it.
Another piece of paper. Yeah,
right.
So
that's not what I'm looking for.
So, news came out that Tom Hanks is going to play Mr. Rogers in a movie.
I did hear that. That sounds like a very interesting idea. I think he'll probably be an excellent fit for portraying Mr. Rogers. I'm interested and excited to know the plot, I guess, and how they will kind of make that interesting. I mean, obviously, he had an interesting life, but whenever they write a movie about something, they have to kind of fit it into a certain formula where there's conflict and then there's things that are going on. Uh-huh. And I'm
curious on what the conflict would be.
Right, how much conflict is there with Mr. Rogers?
And yes, and with the individual himself.
Right.
He's a calm guy. Well, was right. A calm guy.
Yeah.
So how do you have conflict with Mr. Rogers?
Exactly. I'm looking forward to finding out what they do about that. But I think it's a good fit. I agree with the casting. I think Tom Hanks will do a good job
as
Fred
Hanks.
Rogers.
Yeah. I love Tom. I wish I could see everything that Tom has done. And I think that was my goal in the beginning. And then he just keeps going.
Right.
And I think I can't keep up with you. Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
Love watching him too, but I just can't keep up with all the movies.
I've heard good things about The Post, the recent one that he did with Meryl Streep, and I've not seen that one yet. But he's pretty much everything he's done is very solid. I like his choices in terms of making movies. So.
And he's just a versatile actor.
Yeah.
I mean, going from Forrest Gump running to the island with Wilson all the way up to where we are, with Tom Hanks with Mr. Rogers.
Oh, yeah.
I just love everything that he does. And he seems to be, it's one of those, we like people who would like to sit down and have a cup of coffee or a beer with, however, you want to look
absolutely.
At that. And I don't know if he drinks. I'm just saying that, that's kind of what we're attracted to. And he's one of those people that I'd love to sit at a table and just
be interesting
and
to
gab with.
Have a conversation, right?
But yet, if that ever happened, I'd have nothing to say to the man. So what do you say whenever you run into a star? Have you ever thought about that? I mean, in this industry, it's just, and we have to we can't take it for granted because we're in a position where we talk to people who other folks would not have the opportunity.
Yeah.
So I have to recognize that and I understand that. But even when you're around people, I don't know. I just treat them like any other person.
Right.
But yet some people, when you look at them, you're like, what do I say to you?
Right. No, it would be intimidating, I think, to sit down with him. But I feel like you could ask him a question or two, like, what your favorite movie role was or a funny story from, I don't know, from one of your favorite movies that he did or something like that. And I think he's seems like the kind of person that would be able to take that and run with it. And then that would just kind of snowball into a comfortable conversation. I don't know.
I would hope, but I think in the back of my mind, I'm always thinking, you have heard this question 500 gazillion times.
Right.
So I can't imagine you want to answer
it. Interviewed people.
Again.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, every one of these actors that have been around for a while, every one of their movies, I mean, they have the press tour set up and they, go around and are talking to different people, and that you're right. They probably heard every question in the book, and they have their answers prepared. And it'd be interesting to try to figure out a question that he hadn't heard before.
Yeah. Oh, I chuckled because did you watch The Voice this season?
Uh-uh.
The final two were two young ladies. One was Addison Egan. And Addison actually goes to my sister's church. My brother-in-law is a pastor. And so, we went out there to visit, whatever. And when we were there, I mean, she was there. And, I'm watching people to see how many people, glance over at her, And and so my kids were going to go up and meet her. And I just said to my kids, you treat her like any other person.
Yeah.
You do. And my youngest son kind of looked at me like, what do I say? And you just say, it's nice to meet you.
Right.
That's all.
Yeah.
She's just another person. She's here at church. She's not working.
Right,
She's not performing right now. You just go up and say, hi, how you doing?
I'm sure it takes a while to get used to that, to not just be another person for everyone, just for everyone to, obviously you're not going to know everybody else, but everybody else is going to know a lot of things about you if you're in that environment and if you've received that kind of exposure. And I'm sure a lot of people, would come up to someone like that and start acting like they knew that person. And then you're kind of thrown off because you don't know the person that's acting like they know
you.
You
probably get it all the time. Right. So it's kind of like,
right.
Okay.
It's probably take a little while to get used to, but.
And I'm not talking for Addison. I don't know Addison, but just I think any star, I would think that they need that space that they just call home, you know, their circle, so they can let their guard down and just, you know, relax a little bit. So, and you, I mean, I'm sure you get a ton of people at you all the time. Ryan, sign my card.
I get more often, I get, whenever I walk into a meeting, everybody says, quiet down, the media's here. Stop talking about the important and interesting stuff.
That's
We don't want that out quite yet.
When the media walks in, there's a hush over the room.
Yep, all right.
I know.
Right. Are you all recording right now? I get that question a lot, too. I'm not recording right now.
Oh, it's fun. It is a fun industry, though.
Yeah.
It is a fun industry. Yeah. So, all right. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to let you go because my guests are going to come in here in a couple of minutes. Thank you very much for taking a half hour. It was a lot of fun. So if Dave's not back, I'm coming to get you. No, I'm hunting you down tomorrow.
You know where to find
me. That's right. All right. I'm Tracy Morgan, Ryan Saylor, part of our news team for WISR. We'll be right back right after this.
If you're thinking about buying a car, truck, or SUV, or even if you just bought one, make sure you check out the great rates at Armco Credit Union. Through February 28th, you can get a 36-month loan on new and used vehicles for as low as 1.24 APR. We'll even refinance your loan from another financial institution. It's never been easier to join, so call today or visit armcocu.com for membership and rate information. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is federally insured by NCUA.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to Mom, but a little over a year ago, we realized she couldn't take care of herself without our help. And well, how could I not be there for her? I had no idea how hard it would be and just what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and, even for me, ways to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics that got me started, but also information about the hurdles I was facing in this new role. I could even connect with experts and hear from others who had been in my place. I know this road we're on isn't an easy one, but I'm really happy to have the extra help for her and for me. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. This message is brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
For Valentine's Day, treat your sweetheart to an evening of dining and dancing with Pure Gold, Saturday, February 10th. At your hometown center for entertainment, Tanglewood. Pure Gold, with their signature a cappella vocals and four-part harmonies, doo-wops their way through hits of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Doors open at 6 o'clock. Dinner by Chef George at 7. Show starts at 8. As always, it's BYOB. Tickets are $35. Stop by Tanglewood or call 287-0021 for reservations.
This event is presented in part by Deal Automotive, Mars Bank, and Baglier.
Small things can have a big impact. Join the Butler Radio Network as we collect warm, new socks for our Socks for Seniors campaign. Throughout the month of January, we'll be collecting socks that will then be distributed to local seniors. Over the years, we've seen firsthand how the gift of a simple pair of socks has brightened the day of many seniors in the Butler area. Help us warm the feet and hearts of our elderly neighbors during the cold winter months. Socks of all types, styles, and colors can be dropped off at the Butler Network Studios on Pillow Street until January 31st.
Well, welcome back to the program. Tracy Morgan in for Dave Malarkey, and this is our last hour of the program, which we're going to be talking about opioids, the recovery process, a special event that's happening on Tuesday, February 6th. And I'm going to welcome my guest in just a moment. Just as a reminder to you, Dave is expected to be back tomorrow. So you can expect him back on his morning show tomorrow morning. And then, of course, in his afternoon. And he will take over and talk to you at that point. So you can call him tomorrow morning and just say, welcome back, Dave. And he'll take over from there. Okay? So that's what we're scheduling. If it changes, we will be back, but we're expecting Dave to be back here. All right, so it is going to be February 6th, 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Suck Up Theater. It's going to be a special event called Reset Your Brain, and we're going to be talking about this revolutionary approach to opioid addiction and recovery. And with me today is Tracy Hack, the BC3 Community Leadership Coordinator, and also Steve Troy. He's the author, and his book is called Hope is Dope. Welcome, both of you.
Thanks.
It is nice
Thanks
to have
us.
You. Yeah. Tracy, I'm going to start with you. And what I want to know is what brought about this particular program? What was the, I say inspiration, but it's such a heavy topic. I hate to use that word.
Right. Well, we actually started talking about it last summer and last spring. BC3's new strategic plan includes a pathway to communities. I should say.
Sure.
And one of the, and in that pathway, part of it is advancing economic development and improving the quality of life in the Butler area, in the Butler community. So everyone has probably heard, if they haven't heard, they're going to hear now, we are looking for a space downtown. BC3 wants to expand downtown. So this initiative kind of blossomed out of that whole community pathway, wanting to come downtown, wanting to improve the quality of life for people in the downtown area as well as the surrounding townships. And the opiate epidemic seemed it seemed natural to want to take on something that would help with this. It's obviously a problem here in the Butler area, but now it's also nationwide. So that's where the whole initiative started.
And when you get your location downtown, of course my news sense kicks in. I want to ask you all kind of questions,
sure.
But we'll hold off until you're ready to divulge the rest of the information. But the classes that will be held downtown are what you're going to be presenting. I assume they're classes.
Yes.
And what we're talking about today, is that one of the classes that you're planning on having downtown?
Absolutely. So the first round of classes, which will be announced at the Reset event next Tuesday, will be a series of classes. It will be offered right now out of the United Way building downtown, and it will be a follow-up to what people learn when they come to the event. And I'll probably let Steve speak more to what kind of is going to be in the classes, because he's going to be the instructor for the classes. So it will be a four-part series starting in April. And we hope to be offering it many, many times, you know, for as many people as want to come to the classes. It's not going to be just for people in recovery or people who want to recover. It's going to be for, you know, family and friends. It's going to be for community members who want to learn more about what actually happens to the brain in addiction, how they can help and support. It might be for, you know, health, people in the health field. And we will separate those classes as needed according to, you know, the population that's in those classes.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because
yes.
Those that are in the medical field, of course, would understand different terminology than
Correct.
Even I would understand.
Correct.
So that's good that you'll be separating that a little bit. Steve, I want to ask you, what was your inspiration? Your book is called Hope is Dope. What was your thought behind writing this and again, I hate to say what attracted you to this, but what pulled you into this particular subject?
Well, I started working as a therapist about 15 years ago, and I'm trained in mental health background, but there's so much addiction in this area, of course, and all over the country, that it became a natural thing that I fell into. And I honestly fell in love with working with it real quick. I wanted to get into helping field. I was a sports writer with the Pittsburgh Steelers for 15 years before that. And I enjoy helping people. So I wanted to find a way to help and that was effective. And I've been around the block a few times in terms of I've met thousands of people and done thousands of groups. And I started to pay attention to what was effective and what wasn't effective, at least from my experience. And I noticed that there was what was greatly needed was a more positive, upbeat approach that that clients actually sort of came to and gravitated to as a result. And I noticed that it worked. So we did it. I repeated it multiple times in multiple different areas, and I started to notice effects that I thought were pretty positive. Over a course of about 5 years or so, I started having the clients then tell me, could you please write a book?
Put it down.
Yeah,
write
right.
it down so for me. Yeah.
It wasn't my decision as much as I was told by several of them, you will be writing a book, please.
Right.
So the idea of the book is to make it obviously more expandable or to reach to a larger audience so we can affect more people. That's the idea.
So I do want to ask you, how is this a revolutionary approach? I want to ask you how it is a positive and different approach. Talk about the outcomes, though, first of the many programs that you've run. You've run at the same multiple groups you just mentioned. Did you have the same outcome, or were you getting outcomes that you didn't expect?
Well, the same outcome relative to what I had experienced beforehand, you mean?
Or? Yeah, I mean, you have that one group, and you've gone through it, and then you see the results. And then you go through another program, and you get the same results, and you have a third program. You know, is it the same thing over and over?
Right. Well, for me, it's just by comparison, because I've tried many different things, because I wanted to see what was effective and what wasn't. Mm-hmm. And what I noticed is this particular group or this methodology, people would come to on a regular basis. It's not like I had asked them to come. They just started to come. They liked it. When I did other things, what I'd call some of the more conventional things that have been done for a long period of time, they weren't as interested. In fact, they told me again and again, I've heard this thousands of times. It's just not really working. So we went a completely different approach. And there's a heavy science component, but it's very understandable. That's what makes it appealing. It doesn't some of the science stuff I read on the topic is too complex for me to understand. But we take and we make it very understandable so people can understand what's going on for them. Most people don't. And when they get it, that, wow, they have something going inside themselves that is actually affecting their choices and their cognitions, and there's a disease component that they didn't understand, now they're hooked. And there's hope there, because what we immediately do is turn that into the positive methodology, which is they can succeed. I've seen that so many times that this is when, you know, when I met Tracy and this through this BC3 initiative, we wanted to take it on a larger scale, because it's very effective when people have a I can do this approach. Most people have heard again and again, you know, you're probably not going to do this. Most people fail. This is a very depressing situation to be in. And that all makes sense. I understand why, because people have been through so much with it. But we need to emphasize the other side. There are people that have succeeded. I like to point out that I've heard many times, and most of the people I've worked with have heard this, something like 90% of you are going to relapse in the next year. Okay? Well, I always go, well, let's look at the 10%. Why are we talking about the 90%? What are the 10% doing? What are they doing right? Let's emphasize that. And I guarantee you they're not depressed about it. They're doing something right, which is we can do this. They're staying hopeful in a certain way that's effective.
I'd love to hear your overview, because you have said science, easy to understand, and positive all in the same moment. And I thought, okay, I lost you at science and easy to understand. So let's hear an overview of what you do. What do you tell?
Well, this is one example, and I'll be doing this in depth on Tuesday, of course. But the one example I like to use is the way opioid addiction works is very similar to the way gaining weight works. When someone overeats, their stomach gets bigger. And when their stomach gets bigger, what happens to their desire?
To eat. Want to eat more.
Right.
Yeah.
And when they eat more, guess what happens to the stomach?
Mm-hmm.
It grows, right? And at some point, their stomach could actually be tripled or quadrupled their size. And when it's that big, you look at a person and you can be like, well, they obviously probably want or need more food. Well, that's what happens inside the brain of an opioid addict. They end up developing this craving, this intense feeling, like the chemistry of their brain changes in such a way where they need like quadruple the amount of this most critical neurotransmitter called endorphins that the heroin or Oxycontin, all the painkillers are substituting for. They end up developing this craving for the drug, which is in so much greater than what the average person would need. And so the comparison I always make is like if you didn't eat for a few days, you would think of nothing but food. An opioid addict that's trying to quit, again, I work on the recovery side when people are trying to quit. They can't figure out why they can't stop. And I say, there's a voice inside their head, just like there's a voice inside our head that says, you're hungry, time to eat now. They develop a voice that says, you're hungry for opioids, time to use now.
And I can only speak for the eating part, but I think we've all gone through that diet at least attempt where you don't eat and that's not healthy and you should not do that. But then if I've done that, I can tell you at the end of that time period, I eat more.
Mm-hmm.
And so is that relatable to what you're talking about with drugs where you just want more or something more intense?
Yes, because if you don't, the methodology is all oriented around rebalancing the brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where the reset comes in there too. And the fact is the opioid addict has to learn how to produce endorphins again. That's their issue. They depleted them during their active use, and now I call it hibernation. It's in the book. They have a hibernating endorphin issue, and they need to wake them up again. Early on, if you try like through free will or just not using, that doesn't wake them up again. After a period of 2-3 days, if that's all they're doing, yes, it gets far worse, and it's why they end up getting triggered. Not only does the craving get really intense, they get sick along the way.
Now, when you're saying wake up again, I understand that, but don't drugs kill brain cells? Don't drugs do damage that cannot be reversed?
We'll stay specific on opioids.
What
opioids do, they all don't, right. They killing brain cells is not the way to think of it. What they do is change the way the brain cells communicate with each other.
Okay.
And they do it in such a way that it intensifies in some areas and it sort of goes dormant in other areas. So what happens with this chemical called endorphins, endorphins actually means endogenous morphine, which is basically opioids inside the brain already, okay? And we're born with them. We have them all the time. When an opioid addict is using those endorphins, the natural painkiller goes away. Now, they go asleep, or they're hibernating, or they're dormant. And so when they try to stop using, they can't produce their own endorphins, which means they don't have any painkiller naturally, and they're not taking what I call the easy way out by taking the drug. So now everything hurts. So they have no painkiller whatsoever. But those aren't, they're not dead brain cells. One of the chapters in the book is about the need to jumpstart the brain cells again, because they're not dead. Like a car battery is not dead either. They just need a certain energy.
So what, I want to say what's the solution, but I know there's so much between that and the solution. But if somebody's hearing you present and you get to this point, what's the next step in this? Because I know, what is your, let me ask you this first. What's your goal for people whenever they come to one of your presentations? Do you want them to start in the recovery process? Do you want them to stay in the recovery process? What is your goal for them?
Well, yes and yes.
Okay, okay.
But when I meet somebody, they're usually at the beginning point of it.
Okay.
You know? The fact is, by the time someone shows up, they've at my doorstep at least, they're already trying to start recovering. But they've maybe been a couple different places, and they're looking for a different angle. That happens a lot. But the vast majority, I mean 90% of the people I meet, they've not heard of the word endorphin. They don't understand how it relates to them, and they don't know that it's hibernating in their brain. They don't recognize that. And so I want, when we introduce them through the education, when we introduce to them what's actually going on, they get it. And they're like, oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know. That's why it's so difficult. That's why it's so hard. At that point, this is where hope starts to show up, because you show them a pathway out that they hadn't seen before. You know, I make a big deal out of how if what you're doing is constantly using drugs and you need to get it from a dealer, you're always looking outside of yourself, or you're going to the doctor or pharmacist or whatever. You're looking outside yourself. But the truth of the matter is, inside each one of us is a pharmacist. We have a chemical factory up in our brains, and we need to learn how to go up there and get them. Once you explain that to somebody, which they didn't know and understand before, now they're hooked. Now the hope starts, and they start to think, oh, I can fix this. I can do something about it.
Talk about the picture of an addict, because I think a lot of us still have the a picture in our mind that isn't reality. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the opioids now, of course, are folks who may have had surgery or had a broken leg, or somewhere along the line they were prescribed this and now they're hooked.
Mm-hmm.
That's not necessarily the picture that many of us picture as an opioid addict.
Right.
So what's the picture that you see of those individuals coming?
Well, it absolutely cuts across all races and ages and boundaries and genders and everything like that. It definitely does not discriminate. I often compare it to a flu virus or a cold virus. You know, it just goes to the next available host in a way, and you couldn't tell just by looking at somebody. I've been not surprised anymore because I've seen it so much, but on a regular basis, I have very professional people coming in and dealing with it. That's because people, doesn't matter if you're rich or poor or black or white or male or female or young or old, doesn't matter. The fact is, we all deal with stress and we all deal with emotions and we all deal with pain. And that's what the opioids do for people. They take away that type of pain. Obviously, physical injury, which has hooked many people because they start using painkillers, you know, it doesn't care what your demographics are either. Everybody can get hooked one way or another.
If you're just joining us, Steve Troy is here. He's the author of the book Hope is Dope, Achieving Chemical Balance, and he's going to be the featured speaker at an event that is next week on February 6th. And this is going to be at the Suck Up Theater, BC3 Main Campus. And this is called Reset Your Brain, A Revolutionary Approach to Opioid Addiction and Recovery. It's free. It's open to the public, so if you would like to go, you're more than welcome to be able to go. And this is a community initiative by the Butler County Community College. And from BC3, the Community Leadership Coordinator, Tracy Hack, is also with us. And since I just asked Steve, Tracy, about the variety of people that come to his events, I wanted to get your take on the importance of having this kind of event, because it does span generations and races and ages.
Absolutely. Part of the initiative is to help end the stigma of opiate addiction. It's, you know, when we think about traditionally, you know, when we think about opioid addiction, we think heroin. That's pretty much kind of how it got started. But then, you know, they've added the painkillers in it. So that's why we have the epidemic. It's magnified. So part of the initiative is to get rid of the stigma. And we want everybody to come to the event. It doesn't matter if you are a person who wants to be in recovery or you're in recovery or you're a family member of somebody that has a problem or you're just an interested person in our society or in our community that wants to learn more about it, or if you are somebody that works with addicts. This initiative is for everybody. We want to see the community to start to heal together. Obviously, we have to provide hope to do that. And that's what I love about Hope is Dope. I will share with you that my real passion behind this initiative has been because my daughter was, she's a recovering heroin addict, but she was pretty heavily involved in the heroin scene for a number of years. She's been clean for a while. But in her journey, I would look for things and I couldn't understand what was going on with her. I saw what was going on with her. I couldn't understand it. And it wasn't till I found Steve's book and read his book and then reached out to him that the light came on in my brain. And it was like I finally understood what was going on with my daughter and how she couldn't just stop.
Well, first of all, I have to say thank you for sharing as a parent, because you are in the shoes that are very tough. And to be able to share that on the air with people, to be able to be at a point, I don't want to say comfortable, but at a point that you can share, I just have to say thank you for doing that. The second thing is, I'm glad you mentioned your story, because now I can ask you, as a parent of an individual that is going through that struggle, talk to the parent right now that is in the same shoes, that maybe they don't realize what's going on, or maybe they do and they just want to look away and not have to deal with it. Because you, as a parent, you have to deal with it whether you like it or not. Is that true or not?
Absolutely. You can kick them out of the house, you can try to shut them out of your life, but it still remains the fact that you are their parent and you're always going to be their parent. So I guess the thing that I would say is this initiative, it's based on an educational process for everyone, because the general public, people today, do not really understand the brain of a person who is an opioid addicted individual. And if you learn what's actually going on in their brain, if you learn that they need love and support and good nutrition and social interactions, they need all the same things that you do. It's just that they have this chemical imbalance and you have to work with them when they get to that point where they just don't want to live like that anymore. And they do. I think they all get to that point, like, who really wants to live like that, you know, stuck in an addiction and having that craving and being sick when you don't have it and, you know, losing friends and, you know, having to steal things off a family member so you can, you know, go out there and get your fix. No one truly really wants to live that way. So if you can get inside their brain and understand what's happening with them, I think you develop a different type of compassion where you can reach out to them on a different level and be able to speak to them in a different way, and you'll have hope that at some point your loved one will recover.
If someone's listening today and they're just simply exhausted because they have tried and they've tried again and they've tried again and it just seems like an endless loop that they can't seem to get out of, and it feels to that parent, dad or mom, that this just doesn't seem to end, how is it that this book and this particular program can make a difference? I hear you, and I hear that you say there is hope, but to that person that's listening right now that says, hey, I've done everything I know how to do and everything I've been trying to learn how to do, and it's just not working, what would you tell them?
That's exactly what I thought. There's nothing I can do. I have to just let her go. I have to disconnect. It just hurts. It was too painful. And the book and Steve's methodology, like, totally, it just turned me around. I don't know how else to explain it. You know, now I look at my daughter and I see all the wonderful things in her that I had not seen in a long time, because all you see is that ugly addiction. You don't see that beautiful girl who animals flock to and who does so well with children and is so creative. And because all those things got lost in the muck and the cuck. And now I see those things again. And like once in a while she'll say something or she'll do something, and I'll see there's that Melissa that's still there.
Does she recognize it
as
well? Oh,
yeah, she's starting to recognize it. She's clean right now, and she's definitely starting to recognize it. And she's talking about going back to vet tech school, which is where she was going when she started in all this.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about the book Hope is Dope, Achieving Chemical Balance. Steve Troy is here. He's the author of that. He's also a licensed therapist at Quantum Revolution Counseling. That's in Cranberry Township, so local, local, local. We love that. Of course, BC3 tied into all of this, because this particular program is called Reset Your Brain, and it's called A Revolutionary Approach to Opioid Addiction and Recovery. It is free. It is open to the public, and it is going to be on Tuesday, February 6th. Make sure you write that down at 7 p.m., SecUp Theater at BC3's main campus. You know, I hope we fill up the whole, you know, theater, if you will. At the same time, how sad that is, you know, that we have to be at a point that we're filling up a whole theater. But I hope we fill the whole entire thing, because it is such a prevalent problem and a problem we all need to address. I'm going to ask Steve next, how do we do this? And so that's coming up right after this. I'm Tracy Morgan, in for Dave Mullarkey with It's Your Turn.
Choices, decisions, quality health care. These are important issues that really hit home. It's a good thing that Concordia Visiting Nurses is here to help. Home health care can help you or your loved one recuperate from an illness, manage a chronic disease, or recover from an injury or operation right in your own home. If you're in need of home health care, choose Concordia Visiting Nurses. Call toll-free at 1-877-352-6200.
Attention Alexa users, did you know you can listen to WISR through your Amazon Echo? That's right. Alexa, play WISR.
Playing WISR.
WISR is proud to provide you with the music you love on the devices you use. Radio, computer, tablet, smartphone, and now your Amazon Alexa-enabled device. WISR, we're everywhere you are. Just ask Alexa.
And welcome back to the show. Tracy Morgan in for Dave Mullarkey, who is expected to be back tomorrow. So that is his big return after being off from a brief illness. We just said for a couple of weeks, Dave, sleep in. Don't you love when you're the company you work for just says sleep in and we'll be here for you whenever you come back, right? So we just told him to take care of himself. And so he is expected to be back tomorrow, and he should be on his morning show, and he'll be right back here at 12:30. Tomorrow afternoon. So while we have our last half hour together, I wanted to continue talking about this topic, that it is prevalent and it's something we all need to pay attention to. If you are on opioids and you need help, if you're a family member, if you're a friend, understanding the process of this is called Reset Your Brain, and it's a revolutionary approach to opioid addiction and recovery. This is February 6th, 7 p.m., free, open to the public at SecUp Theater, BC3's main campus. And I promised I would ask Steve this. Steve Troy is the author of Hope is Dope. He's a licensed therapist at Quantum Revolutionary Counseling in Cranberry Township, with an office right here in Butler, too. And you have some colleagues with you in that particular office. What's your location in Butler?
It's on Newcastle Road.
On Newcastle Road. Okay, so we can go there if we'd like to take advantage of your services. Mm-hmm. So the big question, Steve, how do we do this? How is this so revolutionary that it will change the way it changes the approach of how we can recover?
Well, it starts literally with hope, because most people don't have any clue that they have opioids already in their brain. That's important. So we get them to understand that. Hope itself, why we say hope is dope, there have been studies done, and if you know the placebo effect, right? the way that when you believe something is possible, it actually somehow has a chemical effect on the body so that it sort of changes the way the body functions. Well, that happens with hope itself. They've demonstrated that hope has an opioid-like effect on the body, which is impressive. I'm going to be talking about that a little bit on Tuesday as well. So dope being the slang term for opioids for many different people, the fact is hope itself is a good feeling, and it starts with that. I mean, nobody likes the feeling of hopelessness. Nobody says, gee, I wish I can wake up tomorrow more hopeless, right? Mm-hmm. But when somebody feels hopeful, and I've experienced this a lot, after doing a group or working on somebody for an hour or so, they say, wow, I feel better. And I'm like, did I give you any drugs? And they're like, of course not. I'm like, that's because hope works. It's inside yourself. And it starts with that. That really is the jump start for people to say, wow, there's a different approach. Now, why we call it revolutionary in many different ways is because we stick with the hope the entire time. We don't do war stories, and we don't talk about all the bad things and all the negativity and all that. There's plenty of that out there, and I'm not trying to say that there's not a role for that, for sure. They're just not balanced. The prevalent approach is a more negative approach, and there's a whole lot of systems out there that are already in play making sure that there are consequences for people. You know, there needs to be a justice system involved, and there needs to be the police doing their job, all of that. I mean, that's part of it, and those consequences add up. But that's the negative side. And if that's all there is, it just doesn't work. Now, I'm for some of those the aspects of this, of course, but we want to balance it with the more positive side. When people actually decide they want to change and they move in the direction of recovery, that's where they need major doses of hope, and they need to be told they can do this, and here's how they can do it. And then we draw the methodology out very clearly for them, which is, again, what we'll be doing Tuesday, saying the problem is a chemical balance in the brain. One example, as I tell my clients all the time, we got to stop calling it a drug problem. I know it's a drug problem. Everybody gets that. But let's call it something else. It's a chemical imbalance. That's the truth. And so what's the solution for it? Chemical balance. Nice and simple, right? So then they say, well, how do we get to work on that? I'm like, well, good question. There's about 40 different scientifically studied ways to do that. And once they've bought into the concept, which is the first step is through education, once they understand, oh, I can do this, now it's the second step, the support, which is helping them do it. And it's one thing to tell somebody, well, there's 40 different ways you can work on producing endorphins and other healthy, happy neurotransmitters in your brain. But once they leave the office, now we need a system and a society set up that can support that. And that's a large part of what this initiative is, making sure that people who say, I'd like help with this, please, they can go into a community that actually will support them in doing so.
When you're talking about a chemical balance, because, of course, I agree with what you're talking about, there's an imbalance, you're trying to get to a balance. Is every individual different because of how much opioids they've taken, maybe how long they've taken? Because I think a lot of us, and this is natural, we just want the cliff notes to tell us you do A, you do B, and you do C, and you're done.
Right.
And so in this kind of scenario, it seems like everybody's an individual. Is that what you find?
Definitely. There's a chapter in the middle of the book on relativity, which is to say, yeah, everybody's different. Another good comparison is to weight loss. If you said, is it different for people to lose weight? I mean, are they different? Of course. Some people need to lose 100 pounds. Some people 10. Some people have some physical limitations that makes it hard for them to exercise, so they have to go more nutrition, for example. Some people have a high metabolism, some people low. So it's totally different. So we individualize. We have to do that for everybody. An example is, one of the best ways to produce endorphins and one of the best ways to succeed in recovery is through exercise. And I know some recovery programs, some out west, that's all they do. They work on exercise. They bring opioid addicts in, and then they work out together, and they do it in a supportive environment, and it really helps. But an opioid addict doesn't feel like exercising an awful lot, and that's part of where they're at in recovery. I mean, early on, that's why medicine is so valuable. There's some wonderful medicines out there. Buprenorphine in particular works especially well for people with opioid dependence. And once somebody's stabilized on a medicine, now they can feel like working out. But if you have a person who is, say, a professional athlete, which I've worked with before too as well, somebody who actually has athletics or exercising as part of their daily routine, that's not what they need to do. They need to work on something else. I don't go tell somebody who's a professional athlete, you need to go exercise. They're already doing that. On the other hand, I've worked with people who have never exercised. And all of a sudden, they just add that to the routine. They're like, yeah, I feel better. I'm like, I know, because now you're producing some of these endorphins again. That's just one example. And there's so many different ones. Working on concepts like meditation and yoga and nutrition and just spirituality in general. Social interaction. There are people that aren't getting out and connecting to people. There's so many different ways you can go with this. So it is all individual. You talk to a person and say, tell me about your life. What are the areas that we need to work on improving? And when they address those areas, they're the ones that come back in and say, yeah, I'm feeling different. I'm feeling better somehow.
When you talk about hope, do you think that equals acceptance? Because in my viewpoint, not that I've dealt with a lot of folks with opioids, but just other people who are struggling with life. And it seems like when there is that negative approach, it seems like there's a lack of acceptance for what the person is going through. Can you talk about that for a moment in how the hope would associate with acceptance? And I don't mean acceptance like, hey, it's okay that you're on opioids. That's not what I'm asking.
That's not what I'm talking about.
I'm talking about, I want you to explain, but the acceptance of, okay, this is where we are. Now let's move forward.
Yeah, you said that very well, because this is not talking about somebody who's actively using and accepting that in any way, of course. And we work on the recovery side. And when somebody is in that position saying, I'd like some help, please, this is where the community comes into play, to what Tracy was talking about in terms of being a parent. I work with families as much as I do the addicts themselves these days, because it's really a team thing. It's the best way to think of it. The addiction has brought everybody down in the family. One of the best things for family members to do who care and want to help is role model and actually work on these things too. Hope is drained out of family members and friends all the time. In fact, hope is drained out of the helpers. And, you know, they call it compassion fatigue. You know, you can get drained working in this field after a while. But I say this to my groups all the time, and they get it, because, by the way, laughter produces endorphins.
Mm-hmm.
My groups, we try to laugh as much as possible. You know, we don't tell war stories. We make jokes and we laugh, and we try to take a more lighthearted approach. But I tell them on a regular basis that, hey, complaining doesn't produce endorphins. You know, regretting the past doesn't produce endorphins. And being fearful of the future, all that kind of stuff, it doesn't produce endorphins. What we need to do is work together as a team. And if we can do that as a team, we're going to affect each other as a team.
Tracy, I want to ask you for a moment. If folks were not listening to us a few minutes ago, you were talking about your daughter who has gone through this and is on a recovery end. And so I want to ask you your reaction as a mother, seeing your daughter go through an opioid struggle. And yet I'm here asking Steve about acceptance in the way of accepting the individual of where they are in that moment. How do you react to that as a mother? How do you deal with that with your daughter?
It's an everyday thing, because, you know, there are moments where you think, uh-oh, she sounds like her old self again. But, you know, after dealing with it for 14 years, I've just come to this point where I am just going to stay on the hope path, because actually that's the only one that feels good. And my daughter would say the same thing. You know, she has reached a point in her life where she's just tired of living that way, and she wants to be on the hope path too. And it's almost like contagious. Once you get everybody on that path, it's like, it is social contagion. Everybody kind of wants to remain there, because it feels so much better than the place that you were at, which was basically hopelessness.
So, Steve, let me ask you this, because I was just in a circle of people that I know where typically we'd go negative, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so you're triggering this, Tracy, this memory of mine, where there was an individual where we expected to go negative, and all of a sudden it was a role reversal, and they went positive on us. And the other people in the group, you know, we paused for a moment, and I thought, okay, we're going to go this route. Let's go. You know, so I did. I jumped on the bandwagon, and we went. And it turned out to be a better conversation. But my question is this. So for folks who are in a recovery process, and they're in a situation maybe at home, or maybe they're not having the social circles that they should, and they don't have the support there to stay in the hope path, what can they do?
Well, there's three ways to approach it. I make a point of this in the book, and almost everybody they talk to, I tell them this pretty quickly. There's three angles to approach this. One's physical, one's mental, one's spiritual. And only one of them specifically needs other people. That's the physical thing, getting together and doing things together with people. But two-thirds of this is just done inside your own brain, the mental and the spiritual aspect of it. And if they're not in a position, again, that's some of where the support comes in. We would like to set up a community where we have I love doing groups. I've done thousands in my life. If I had my way, I'd do them all day long, because I love them. They're fun, and they're enjoyable, and they're meaningful. So I'm hoping to set up we're hoping to set up a situation where that's prevalent and it's all over the place. So those people you just described would have a place to go to, sort of like the AANA meeting kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And people can come, and it's a supportive, happy, healthy environment in which people are growing and learning together. So that would be one angle. But the rest of it, 2/3 of this at least, can be done inside oneself, which is thinking about things and studying things, learning self-improvement, all of that, and practicing some of these virtues that really work, hope being, you know, a foremost among them. And they can do that wherever they are. You don't have to be with a person in order to do that.
Because, Tracy, isn't that an odd feeling? All of a sudden, you're in a negative path, negative circles, feels like years, could have been years. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, now you're supposed to be positive, and you are. It's an odd feeling to switch, isn't it?
You know, I don't know if I would describe it as odd. It took me a while. I mean, even when I started in the process to, you know, just try to, when I would have those bad moments where I was thinking, having that negative thinking pattern, and I would go back to that hope. So it took me a while to retrain my brain, reset my brain, you know, and I'm not even the addict, but it took me a while to reset my brain. Wait a minute. If I look at it from this approach, wow, it just feels so much better. And my approach with my daughter is so much better. And she sees the positive vibes coming off of me, which lifts her. So part of what Steve was saying is we really want to connect people in the community through this process, hopefully after we provide some education about how the brain is really affected and how we can reverse that endorphin process. We want to be able to connect people who are recovering with different places downtown where they can go and build endorphins, the Butler Art Center, Yoga on Main, Brushes and Bar Stools, all these places, a library where you can read and about anything, and be able to help them connect so that they can figure out what works for them and the community can see the whole thing as a healing process.
And I'm glad you're saying community, because it takes quite a few people within the community to make it work. And you've been working hard with a particular team as well just to make this work.
Correct. When we first started this initiative, I just tried to reach out to people that were connected with different groups in our community to be on our advising team, so that we, you know, we're headed in the right direction. And then you can get a different perspective from people, and some of them were negative and some of them were positive. And so now we're kind of on the positive train, and the people that are connected with the advising team, I think, can see that. And so it's been great.
It has been great. This is Reset Your Brain. It's free, open to the public, Tuesday, February 6th. A revolutionary approach to opioid addiction and recovery, both for those who are struggling and also for friends and family. If you want to learn about more and have that education or even take these classes. And can you explain the classes once we get into them again? Folks may be just joining us, and BC3 is looking for a place downtown. We've done news stories on that. And so you're looking to have some of these classes be a part of that venue downtown.
Right. So the first set of classes will be offered starting in April. They'll be offered 4 classes Tuesday nights, 4 in a row in the month of April. And because we don't have a facility downtown yet, United Way has donated a space to us. If there are more registrations than we have room for at United Way, the Family Pathways has donated space in their facility. So we can have lots of people in these classes, and we can offer them in number. Depending on the individuals that sign up for the classes, we can have separate classes for, you know, support, separate classes for those in recovery. So we're prepared to do all that.
Do you have it set up on how we RSVP at this point, or is that going to be coming down the road?
Yeah, well, they will receive information if they come to the event. Next Tuesday, we'll be actually physically handing them a paper. They'll also be able to register for the classes there. And the classes will eventually end up out on the BC3 website. They'll actually be able to, like, Google Reset Opioid Addiction, and in our classes for the Reset program will show up.
Steve, how do you break this down into 4 classes? I could keep you here all day. So to have 4, what, 1 hour and a half classes or so?
I can talk about it in a minute, or I can take about, you know, a year to talk about it. Whichever approach you want, you know, give me the time frame.
So you will be teaching these particular classes, then?
Yeah, well, it's broken down, and having done this a number of times, into the hour-long, or what we have those, you know, increments where we can get as much understandable information done in that period of time. But yeah, it goes on for longer than that, if necessary. But I'd like to say it's taking a very complex subject and make it as simple as possible. And it really does come down to one word, and that's what the whole methodology is about, and it's endorphins. That's the answer. The scientific community has spent a whole lot of time on dopamine. I talk about that, too. It's very involved, for sure, but it's slightly off target. We want to do endorphins and dopamine. The fact is, dopamine gets produced in anything that you get excited about. Well, we're trying to get people excited about producing endorphins, which specifically targets the opioid receptors. That's the issue. So in a word, it's endorphins. So I could just talk about that for 4 straight hours. And if people just get that in their head, you know, it's one of the jokes I make. Nobody forgets the name of their favorite drug. You know, they don't wake up in the morning and go, wait, what drug do I like to use again? You know, rhymes with Schmerowin. I don't remember that drug. Now, of course, they remember heroin. Now, they forget, however, or don't even know that there's a solution, and that the word is endorphins. So I could just talk about that for 4 straight hours and cover all of that. But we go into many other topics. And in the middle of the book, it's a lot about that. It's the middle of the book is where we go into some other ideas in terms of how recovery works and why it can be difficult, but also why focus is super important, how the brain works in something called Hebb's Law, practice makes perfect. And if you practice thinking about something in a very depressing way for a long period of time, guess what you develop? Depression. If you practice worrying about something for a long period of time, you develop anxiety. If you practice thinking this is disease and there's no solution and I'm probably going to relapse, you get good at that, and that's what follows. But then there's a whole different way of thinking. If you practice thinking in a different way, a more hopeful way, like you said with your story, a lot of people tend to go pessimistic. Pretty simple. And we're very affected by other people and their energy all the time. If we change that modality and we practice a different way, it becomes habit. Practice makes perfect. So that's like part of one of the night's classes as well. When people recognize, like any skill, if you work on it, you'll get better at it. And one of my favorite things I like to talk to people about is people don't know that some of these virtues like hope, are they found the neurons in the brain for them. But if you don't activate them, you don't get to feel hope. And so it's a bit of a seek and you shall find thing. Go looking for them. I call it an Easter egg hunt. Go looking for forgiveness. Go looking for courage. Go looking for virtue in your brain. And if you do that, it starts to feel good. Well, people don't know this. They don't know that it's up there, and they're always looking external to themselves. And when you go inside, that's where the real healing happens, and it's where the chemical balance happens.
So when folks relapse and they feel guilty about that, and then they resist, sometimes they may isolate, maybe they go back into the pattern. Are they still not in a position where they're full of hope? I don't know how else to say it, because it is a different kind of approach that you're coming at this with.
This is an hour-long group. How long do we got?
Yeah, right. 2 minutes. Yeah, go.
Okay. The fact is, it's a probability thing. It's something else we explain in great detail for people who are interested. I have a second book called New Eyes, in which we go into great detail on that, too. But the fact is, it's a probability thing. And what happens, and this is one of the ways I show this to parents all the time, most people, if you're dealing with someone that, say, used every day for 5 years, and then in year 6, they're only using once a week. Is that progress? Yes. They went from using every day to once a week. But most people will notice the day they used and say, ah, man, they're using again. And they miss the progress. And so the mind shift, or the mindset, needs to shift towards there is some growth here. Now, the probabilities are relapses do happen, but we don't obsess over them. I do this all the time when someone comes in, and if there's a relapse, the first thing out of my mouth is, well, what'd you learn? Not shame on you and that's bad and you're back at zero and all that kind of stuff. It's okay, what'd you learn? Let's talk about what led up to this and what you're going to do next time. And then we're going to practice a different way.
So you're still allowing people to process what's happened.
Oh, yeah, sure. They need to do that.
Yeah.
That's how they learn.
Yeah,
right? Exactly.
And I'm glad that this has come up at this point. I'm sorry it's taken 15 minutes to get to this one point, because I didn't think of it earlier, but I think people need to process. Mm-hmm. But yet when we process, is that where you say we go too negative with it?
Oh, absolutely, because they're so used to processing on the negative side, and that actually creates more cravings. Like I say, complaining doesn't produce endorphins. Being hopeful does. They have to practice looking at it a different way. And when they process it inside their head, because I can't do it for them. I mean, energy does transmit, you know, the whole social contagion thing, which I'll be talking about on Tuesday too. It does help to be in a supportive environment, but it's still up to the individual. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, right? And so they still have to do the process inside themselves. And it can be a lot longer for some people,
But like with everybody I've ever worked with, if they stick to it, it's going to eventually work.
But I think people do need a place to go, and I don't think there's enough of this. I mean, this is different from what I've heard for many years from folks dealing with different struggles. And so is this something that's out there in the country, or are you the, should I say, creator of this kind of idea?
There's other optimistic, hopeful people out there, that's for sure.
Okay.
In terms of a treatment methodology, I've been looking for a long time. I've not noticed.
Okay.
I did hook up with the guy on the West Coast who contacted us, because we have videos online now. It's one thing, I like to reach people through YouTube. You know, we have the Quantum Revolution Counseling channel has all our videos on there. But people, so they can watch from their own, you know, from home. But I did meet a guy out on the West Coast who connected with us, and he was very optimistic and upbeat, and he understood the endorphin connection, stuff like that. So our mission really is to spread the use of that word as much as possible and get the thousands, millions of people are interested in helping here, rallying around that concept of we need to have opioid addicts producing these endorphins again. And there is not that much of it. I've ran into barriers because you hear people saying, well, it's about dopamine. I'm like, well, it is about dopamine, but it's also about endorphins. And that I haven't heard much. So that's why we sort of call it revolutionary. It is new in that regard.
And I wanted to bring that out because it's always nice to be able to have that right here in Butler. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not going to Pittsburgh. Nothing wrong with Pittsburgh. We don't have to drive to Philadelphia. We don't have to drive to a whole different state to go to something like this. Mm-hmm. This is very unique, and it's right in our area. Again, Steve has an office Steve and his colleagues mm-hmm. have an office in Cranberry Township, also in Butler. So if this is something that you'd like to get into, then please call Steve. But at the same time, this event that is going to be on February 6th is a great introduction. And yeah, you have an hour and a half, Steve, so you're going to fit all this in an hour and a half, right?
Yeah, a few breaths and I'll just go.
Yeah, and so it's free and open to the public. And so this is something that's absolutely wonderful for those who are struggling and for those family members who need to understand and would like to understand. So SECOP Theater, BC3 Main Campus. It's called Reset Your Brain, A Revolutionary Approach to Opioid Addiction and Recovery. Now, Steve's book, the one that we're talking a lot about here, do you only have two books or do we have more?
Yeah, that's it.
Two so far.
Many people told me to write more. So
you probably will. Hope is Dope is the one that's right in front of me. It's Achieving Chemical Balance. His name is Steve Troy, but it's T-R-E-U. So if you're looking that up, then you want to spell it that way. The author of Hope is Dope. And so, Tracy, I want to start with you with a final thought. Steve, I'll end with you. But Tracy, just your final thought in the importance of this kind of program for folks that are either parents or those that are struggling.
My final thought would be, of course, please come to the event, because I think that you're going to be pleasantly surprised at the hopefulness that is going to result out of this initiative that we're taking. So hopefully it'll bring something really, really positive back to Butler. And I see a lot of good things coming for Butler on the horizon, and I see this healing as being a really big part of it.
It feels like we're a leader in the effort.
Absolutely.
It does, especially with this kind of program. So, Steve, your final thoughts on the importance of all of this information. It's a lot of information.
It's a team effort. It's so much more than addicts and the clients who are struggling with this. It does take a lot more people to really make a major change. And the more people who care about this, whether it's family members or friends or just community members that care, that would like to see this problem be attacked in either a different way or an effective way, the more people that understand what the issue is, the quicker this will go. Because if we leave it up to the people who are struggling with it, it's going to take a lot longer. Mm-hmm. But if we work together as a team, we can tackle this, as they call it, you know, the war. It is a big war, but the more soldiers we have involved, the better it's going to go.
It's new, it's different, it's positive.
Mm-hmm.
And those
Absolutely.
Are all things we want to hear. So Steve is going to be leading this. He's the featured speaker at this particular event. Tracy Hack, she's the BC3 Community Leadership Coordinator. Tracy, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you
us.
For having me.
And Steve, it was wonderful talking to you as well. We'll see you next week.
Thank you very much.
All right. And folks, again, this is a free and open event Tuesday, February 6th, 7 p.m., SECOP Theater, BC3 Main Campus. We'll be back in just a moment. We'll close out the show together. I'm Tracy Morgan in for Dave Malarkey with It's Your Turn.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 29, 2, 9. The pick 3 is 851, 851. The Pick 4, 9742. The pick 5, 14670. The wild ball for each of those is 2. The treasure hunt, 3, 6, 21, 22, and 27. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $50,000.
Sunnyview Nursing and Rehabilitation Center has a rich history in Butler. Now they are making continuous improvements and technological advancements to better serve the community. Sunnyview specializes in short-term rehabilitation and skilled nursing. Schedule a tour to see their beautiful facility. Call 332-6872 or visit sunnyviewcenter.com. Sunnyview Nursing and Rehabilitation Center, close to your home and close to your heart. Finding qualified candidates to fill jobs is one of the toughest tasks employers face. What's the best way to find those candidates? How about radio? Radio reaches 93% of adults on a weekly basis. So your next qualified candidate is out there and probably listening to our station. Let the Butler Radio Network help craft a message that will bring skilled employees to your office. Put simply, the Butler Radio Network can help you find more qualified candidates. Call today at 724-283-1500 or visit butlerradio.com. And click on advertising.
Welcome back to the program. Tracy Morgan in for Dave Malarkey. It's just about 5 minutes till 2. Wow, this show does fly, huh? When you are having fun, it's always a good time to spend some time with you. So I have to say thank you very much for having me in for a couple of days. I appreciate that. We'll do all that in a second because we still have some time left. Just about 5 minutes left. I want to make sure that you are aware that the Men Who Cook Dinner Dance, we had this last year, and it was a huge event. Hey, when you guys get to cook and we get to eat, I'm a happy person right there. So this is what we get to do. And it's going to be a good time at the Butler Vagabond Center. This one will be on February 17th. And so our details are already set. We're gaining speed on this in the way of getting to it. We turn the calendars in, 2 days, I guess. 6 p.m., February 17th at the Butler Vagabond Center. It is a BYOB event. Keep in mind, mixers will be provided, but if you want to bring your own bottle, there you go. $20 per person, and you can buy the tickets now. So you basically go and you sample all the different, flavors, but meals, desserts, whatever they're going to be cooking. You sample all of that. And it's for one price. And then what they get to do, I say they meaning the chefs, we'll just call them all chefs, whether they are or not. What they will be doing is they're going to be competing for the Golden Fork Award. And they are going to be inducted into the Men Who Cook Hall of Fame. And so that's just the fun part of the evening. We get to eat. So it all works out for everyone. So somebody actually gets the award. We get to eat. Tickets at the or for the event are available in two different places. You can come to our station. If you know where we are on Pillow Street, then you're set. But we're at 252 Pillow Street, and you can come in and get those tickets if you'd like. If you want our phone number, it's 724-283-1500. That will take you to the front office. And you can get your $20 tickets there. $20 per person, by the way. The other way is you can go online and you can go butlerradio.com. I could go through all the radio stations we have, but butlerradio.com is just fine. And you can get on there when you see the banner. It has a big apron with a big mustache and the bow tie and the flipper. We'll just call it the flipper. We'll do that. Spatula. But it's the flipper. Okay, so when you see that, it says Men Who Cook. Just click on that banner. And then when you get there, we do have a spot that you can click, and you can purchase your tickets online there. So Kevin Boozel, Butler County Commissioner, one of our men who will be there cooking. We have, Mark or Sparky Mars, PennDOT. We have Mike Panza coming, Dave Crater, Jim Ciprian, Miller Shoes. So you have all of those individuals who will be there. And that's only a partial list. I know we're going to be adding gentlemen to this particular list who are going to cook for us. Details on our website, butlerradio.com. Again, you can buy your tickets online as well, February 17th. Don't forget about this event that we were talking about for the last hour, Reset Your Brain, free and open to the public, Tuesday, February 6th at 7 p.m. to 8:30, SecUp Theater, BC3 Main Campus. a revolutionary approach to opioid addiction and recovery. And it really does. It sounds like a brand new approach. And that's always nice to be able to hear, because when you're trying to go through something and you're trying and trying and yet it just doesn't seem to be working, it's always nice to have some additional information to try to help you along. And since this is new, different, positive, it may be just the thing that you need. So don't give up on all your other efforts, though. Please don't do that. But this is Reset Your Brain, open to the public, free, February 6, 7 p.m., Suck Up Theater, BC3. All right, so I don't have anything big to say except thank you, really. Actually, Dave is expected to be back tomorrow, and so it's been a while since we've been able to hear his voice, and that is kind of lonely when you get used to us being with you no matter where you are. If you're listening to us on Alexa or online, I mean, it seems that we can just be anywhere with you. Not to have Dave's voice around all the time, you miss him, and I get that. So we will look forward to Dave's return tomorrow. He will be on his morning show to start out the morning, and he's going to do what he normally does. And then, of course, Coffee with Kate tomorrow. And then he'll be right back here for It's Your Turn at 12:30. So we look forward to his return, but thank you for having me in his place for a few days and a couple of weeks. We will be back again tomorrow. Well, I'll be in a different capacity. I'll talk to you at 12 noon for the news. We'll hold on to that. But we will all talk to you tomorrow. Thanks. Have a great day. Stick with us throughout the day for more music. I'm Tracy Morgan, in for Dave Malarkey.